Okay, good morning. First, let me thank the organizers for inviting me here. Actually, before I got this invitation, I didn't even know I was working on atomic gases, so it was certainly a nice surprise. So, let's see here. So my talk really is going to show an example of what Ashwin just told us about. And since we didn't have a coffee break in between, I guess I don't need to review much of what he said. So I will do that very quickly and then move on to this spin 1/2 Heisenberg model with four spin interactions, which I think is a model which does show this phenomenon. So I will study this model using quantum Monte Carlo simulations. I do those simulations in this case in the valence bond basis. So very briefly, I will tell you about how that's done. Then I show my results. I will show results for exponents and so on. I will also discuss this emergent U1 symmetry, which is an important aspect of this transition. Okay, so we heard all about this, so let me not go too much into it. I just want to confirm that we have in some model an antiferromagnetic to valence bond transition and try to see if it really is continuous. One thing I want to emphasize here, which I think Ashwin maybe didn't say too much about, was that at this quantum critical point, this emergent U1 symmetry in some sense corresponds to divergent fluctuations of both this plaquette-like and columnar-like valence bond solids. Exactly at the critical point, the system hasn't yet made up its mind about what valence bond solid it will finally go into, and that has some relationship to this U1 symmetry, and I will talk about that at the end. So the question now is, do deconfined quantum critical points exist? So of course we would like to know whether they exist in nature, and Ashwin pointed out one case where there is at least some exotic transition. But before that, a first step would be to just see if we can find some model Hamiltonian in which we could numerically confirm this kind of transition, just to know a little bit more about it, and to confirm that it really exists. So, of course, valence bond solid phases have been studied for a long time in this field. In particular, there's this important PRL from 98 by Reed and Sachdev that Ashwin mentioned as well. So you could ask yourself, well, that was a long time ago. Why don't we know everything about this nail to VBS transition already? And certainly people have been looking numerically also at this question for a long time. The problem numerically has been that in quantum Monte Carlo simulations, if you want to study these frustrated models that would be likely to have such phases and transitions, we have sign problems, so we cannot really go to large lattices and study the phase transition in detail. Maybe you can say something about, okay, there's a valence bond solid phase, but you cannot say much about the transition because you can only do exact diagonalization of very small lattices. So there's no really good unbiased method to study these frustrated spin models, and so we only really have approximate analytical results available to study this. So what I would like to tell you now is that we have actually a model which is not frustrated in the standard sense. It doesn't have a sign problem in quantum Monte Carlo simulations, but nevertheless it has this kind of transition, and that's this model. So it's the Heisenberg model on a 2D square lattice, and then we add to it, or rather subtract, this term which is actually a subset of the full ring exchange, but it's not the complete ring exchange. That would have these sites I, J, K, L also sitting on the diagonals of a plaquette. Now we only include these, and in addition we make the sign negative, which is opposite to what it actually would be if you derive it from a Hubbard model or something like that. So the idea here is just to find a model which shows this transition. I don't claim that this has any relationship to any at least solid state system in nature. It wouldn't surprise me if in cold atomic gases indeed the experimentalists could cook up this model. That would certainly be interesting. So the way I studied this model very quickly, it's a projector scheme. So we work in the valence bond basis. So the valence bond basis, of course, is the basis of states of singlet products. So each of these bonds corresponds to a singlet. And the idea is to work in this basis to project out the ground state. So we apply a high power of the Hamiltonian to some state which may already be a good variational state, for example, or it doesn't really help to, but that helps. And then if you want to calculate an expectation value, we subtract from the left and the right, and we can calculate essentially anything. So this is done stochastically. I don't want to say exactly how it's done. It would take too long. I just show a pictorial example here. So this state psi could be just a single valence bond state, or it could be a sum over some linear superposition, which we sample as well. But in any case, a configuration in the simulation would look like this. So this would be an example for a 1D six-side system for a Heisenberg Hamiltonian. So the idea is that the Heisenberg Hamiltonian, as well as this Q interaction that I wrote down in the previous slide, has these singlet projection operators. So when a singlet projection operator acts on these valence bonds, either nothing happens or we reconfigure these bonds. And we do this from both sides, and then we can put any operator here in between. And because of the overcomplete and non-orthogonal nature of this basis, this turns out to be very convenient in practice. So the first question we want to ask about this JQ model is whether it has a valence bond solid phase, and I want to see whether the Nell order goes away. So I want to just show these order parameters that we study. So the square of the columnar valence bond solid order parameters, this one, these correspond to the dimer strength, nearest neighbor spin correlations that we multiply by each other, and the valence, the wave vector is pi zero, so that reflects this number here. And the sublattice magnetization is just this standard staggered spin-spin correlation functions. So here I show you some results for how these order parameters behave as a function of the inverse lattice size for two different strengths of this J coupling, J over Q. So the first thing would be to look at J equals zero, so the pure Q interaction. And then you can see how this dimer VBS order parameter does scale to a finite value, indicating that there is valence bond solid order. Whereas the sublattice magnetization, if you go to this graph, scales to zero. So there's VBS order, but no Nell order. If we go to J over Q of just 0.1, then you see it changes. Now there is no valence bond solid order, but there is a tiny Nell order. So, and of course we know that if J becomes large, then for sure we have Nell order. So this may be a small Nell order here, but it was just to show that this happens very quickly here, that you in this model, we can barely actually access the valence bond solid phase, but we can. So then the next question is, do the VBS and antiferromagnetic order parameters vanish at the same point? This is just something to show roughly that that's the case. So this shows the Nell order, and this is the valence bond solid order for a few values of this coupling ratio. And you can see that at around J over Q 0.04, this is consistent with these order parameters both going to zero. And this curve here is something like 1 over L to 1.3, and that number 1.3 corresponds to the exponent combination Z plus eta. So this would correspond to Z plus eta around 1.3. And as I will show next, and what is required in this theory is that Z should be 1, so that would correspond to eta 0.3, which is not quite as large as Ashwin told us about in the previous talk, but nevertheless, it's much larger than eta normally is in 2 plus 1 dimensions. So, for example, we can compare this with a much better studied transition and better understood transition, that in for example, in a bilayer Heisenberg model where you tune the coupling between the layers, and there's a transition at some critical coupling ratio around 2.52. So here I show some results around that critical coupling. And here you can see, since now eta is something like 0.03, this is almost linear here. So here you can already see, without doing much further analysis, that there is something different here. There's some clear curvature to those curves. But of course, we want to do things more carefully, so I will show some more careful finite size plots momentarily. Let me first say a little bit more about this dynamic exponent z. So z relates, of course, length and time scales. So if we have some excitation of momentum q, the energy goes like q squared. In a finite size, that corresponds to the finite size singlet triplet gap scaling as the system length to minus z. One nice thing about this valence bond basis is that there's actually an improved estimator to calculate directly the singlet triplet gap, so one can get the gap for larger system sizes than you would normally do. So here I show what I get for the singlet triplet gap for a few values of j over q, and I multiply it by l. So that means that if the gap goes like 1 over l, if z is 1, I should scale to a finite value, and I as you see, it does do that. So in fact, at criticality or around the critical point, the gap goes like 1 over l plus some higher order corrections, which of course are completely expected. As you go away from that point, the gap starts to grow, or it starts to decay quickly to zero. Exactly at j equals zero, as deep as I can go into the valence bond solid phase, the gap extrapolates to a small value. So this is actually delta divided delta over q. And you can see that the gap is not very large. It's something like 0.07, which again means that this valence bond solid is not very robust here. We are quite close, in fact, to the critical point, even in the extreme case, j equals zero. So z equals 1, eta around 0.3, so that's at least consistent with deconfined quantum criticality in the sense that z has to be 1, and this large eta, as we heard in the previous talk, was predicted and also found in this hedgehog suppressed simulations by Ashwin and Matrunich.
Yeah, in the beginning you said that the reason part of the typical math is because it's a sine problem.
Yeah, so this... So this model doesn't have a sine problem, that was the point. So this model is not frustrated in the standard sense. It's on a square lattice, but I throw away the frustrating part of the ring exchange interaction. So it's simply how you can really think of this interaction as just something that wants to enforce singlets on these bonds, horizontal or vertical bonds. So there's no sign problem. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit more about these exponents. So I can calculate, for example, the correlation lengths of the spins and the dimers. I calculate the so-called Binder ratio for spins and the long distance spin and dimer correlations, and I just want to show you how well these scale in finite size scaling. So for those of you who are familiar with numerics, you know that if we want to extract the correlation length, for example, we should plot things versus the deviation from the critical points times L to the 1 over nu, and then on the y-axis we have to take whatever quantity and divide out the size dependence at the critical point, and then the curve should collapse. And here I can use just one exponent nu and one GC to collapse all these three data sets, so both for spins and dimers. In addition, if I go to the spin and dimer correlations, I can use the same nu as I got from here and just adjust eta, and then I can collapse both spin and dimer correlations. So in fact, everything scales with just two exponents, nu around 0.78 and eta around 0.26 at one point around 0.04. So in the theory, nu has to be the same. The correlation lengths for these two orders should diverge with the same exponent. There was no prediction about eta. So in principle, eta does not have to be the same in the theory for spins and dimers, but that's in fact what I seem to find within numerical precision. So there's already some speculation by Sentil and others that maybe this indicates that there's some even higher symmetry at this point, that it could be maybe an SO5 symmetric point, but we don't know that yet. So is there any other evidence for this deconfined corner criticality? So this exponents, of course, just indicate some sort of consistency. Another thing I would like to look at is this emergent U1 symmetry. So as Ashwin explained, there's some length scale, which I call lambda, at which this Z4 anisotropy should become relevant. And as we go to the critical point, this lambda should diverge as a power of the correlation length. So I want to look at first an analogy of this in a well-known classical model, namely the classical 3D XY model with a Z4 anisotropic term like this. So here it's known that this H term is marginally irrelevant, I guess even dangerously irrelevant, I guess is what I should say. So the universality class is unaffected, but the ordered state will reflect the presence of this term. So one way to detect this numerically is to look at the ordered parameter histogram. So I can calculate for this XY model the X and Y magnetizations, and then I can look at the order parameter histogram, the probability distribution, joint probability distribution of those two. So here is some numerical example. So above TC, this looks completely circular, and this is peaked in the middle. Yellow here means the highest value, so it's just one bump in the middle here. As I go, and that again shows that this term is irrelevant above TC. It should also be irrelevant at TC. If I go below TC, however, you clearly see that I get four peaks in this distribution, of course, because the spins want to align predominantly along those four preferred directions. In the simulation, if I just do a single spin algorithm, eventually I will not be even able to tunnel between these four directions, so I will just get stuck in one direction and stay there. So now we want to look at something like this for the quantum model. But let me first show how we, Ashwin discussed this, but let me say this in a slightly different way, how we can relate these vectors in this 3D XY model to the valence bond solid patterns in the quantum model. So if I do this simulation of the classical model and I look at these histograms, then I can ask, well, I know what points along these symmetry axes, what they correspond to. They correspond to ordering along those directions. But how about a configuration in one of those directions? Well, if you look at such a configuration here, I just show one layer. You can see that, of course, you have approximately equal numbers of up and right spins, and here I color code them according to the dominant direction. You have a few of those other directions as well. These arrows you can associate, as Swinch said, with these different valence bond solid patterns. So if you see a case where you mix up and right arrows, that would be mixing these two, then you see that actually corresponds to plaquette order. So going around the circle here means that we mix plaquette and columnar order in some particular way. So now we can, well, so now we can look at these order parameter histograms, and if we find in the quantum model such circular looking histograms, then that corresponds to having fluctuations between plaquette and columnar order. So that's what I want to do next. So in the simulation, we sample the ground state. So using this projector technique, we get the ground state as an expansion in these valence bond solid states, valence bond states. And I can graph the probability distribution of these matrix elements. So I look at the matrix elements of the X dimers and the Y dimers. And actually here I should, of course, sum over I2. So it should be the full X and Y columnar order parameters. So in addition to looking at this emergent U1 symmetry with these things, I also want to address the question of whether this could actually be a weakly first order transition. So in these histograms, you should see the coexistence of that you should have at the first order transition of NEL and VBS as some structure in this order parameter histogram. Okay, let's see what I see. So here I have a value of J over Q which corresponds to right above the critical point. So there's no order yet, and that's reflected in just the central peak in the order parameter histogram. This was for 32 times 32 lattice. And now I just want to go towards the valence bond solid phase, and you can look in particular at this radial probability distribution corresponding to taking a cut across here. So it's still here at the critical point, peaked in the middle, and then slowly I start to develop the ring which corresponds to finite VBS order. And this is as far as I can go to J equals zero. And you see here in this histogram, it is circular, so that indicates that there's a mixture of these plaquette and columnar orders. But I never see those four peaks that I eventually would want to see. So if the state really is a columnar state, then I should get 4 points here. If eventually it's a plaquette state, then I should get the peaks here at these 45 degree shifted points instead. But I see neither of those. So why is that? So to get some more feeling about whether this is alarming or whether it actually is expected, I want to return to the classical model. And in the classical model, look at the crossover from U1 to ZQ order parameter histograms. So let me first show some other histograms here. So I already showed you some results for Z4. So here I have, well, this is slightly below TC, so it's in the order phase. If I look at a small system, I see this fourfold symmetry, but it's quite dense, this histogram. As I go to a larger system, I get more pronounced peaks here. If I go to Z8 and I look at an L equals 4 system, and this is actually far below TC, which you can see because this there's nothing in the middle here. But for L equals 4, you don't see any anisotropy. It looks completely ring-like. Whereas if I go to L equals 32, then I clearly see these 8 peaks here. So this length scale lambda, that corresponds to the size which is between these two at which these peaks would start to emerge. That would mean that at that system size, at that length scale, the anisotropy that I put in my model is becoming relevant in the ordered phase. So I would like to have some order parameter which quantifies that. So the standard magnetization or absolute value of the magnetization would correspond to the mean radius of this feature here. So just this integral of the probability distribution as a function of R and phi. So if I, in addition, put in a cosine q theta here in the integrand, then I get something I here call m star, which is something which should become non-zero only if I have these q features here. If I have just a ring, this will of course be zero. So this m star here should be controlled by the exponent, which by the length scale lambda, which goes like the correlation length to some power a. So we will use these finite size scaling formulas to look at that. So this is just the standard finite size scaling hypothesis for m. This is what you would get if you assume that m star is controlled by lambda instead of psi. And I should say it was very useful to come here to Santa Barbara to discuss with Leon Balance, because he was able to put this on a more solid footing just 2 days ago, even extracting the full scaling function. So here the exponent should always be the 3D XY exponents, which are of course well known. So let me show you some results for Z4. So here I plot this M and M star. This is M. This is M star for different system sizes. So you can see here that M, the normal magnetization as a function of system size, goes down and it becomes more sharper, of course. M star, if we go far below TC, it grows with the system size, also becomes much sharper. Now I use those finite size scaling formulas to try to collapse the data. Here for M, it collapses as it should, we know the exponents. Here for M star, I need to adjust this A to get a collapse. I do get a collapse, and now with A equals 1.07. So that means that lambda diverges as psi to 1.07. So here lambda is not much larger than psi, but it is slightly larger. If I go to Z6, here's the raw data, and when I do the scaling again, the normal magnetization collapses with the known exponents. And now for M star, I need to use 1.6. So now this A is much larger than before. And in fact, we have done this, my student Jay Lowe did this for Q ranging from 4 to 8, and what we find is that this scales like Q squared. And this, in fact, agrees with some RGX and epsilon expansion by Oshikawa from 2000, where he found asymptotically that this should go like Q squared divided by 10. So you see we are off by maybe 50%, but the Q squared is correct. So, well, with this I really wanted to show that, well, in the quantum case, we really only see that ring, but we only go up to 32 times 32 systems, so maybe it's not so surprising if this exponent A in the quantum case is large enough, then certainly we can see something quite circular, as we do, in fact, if we go to a large Q classical model. Okay, let me just quickly summarize. Okay, so we have results for this JQ model, which appear at least consistent with a continuous transition. Z is 1, and we have a single set of exponents that describe both these order parameters. In addition, we find the same eta for both these orders, so that may indicate some higher symmetry in this model. And we see the emergent U1 symmetry. And I also showed you some results for how, in the classical model, this length scale associated with U1, how it depends on Q. And this would indicate probably that this exponent is quite large in the quantum case. This A exponent in the quantum case is quite large because we don't see any features of the Z4. So the last thing I want to say that maybe this JQ model is sort of an icing model of deconfined quantum criticality. So much more work should of course be done, but it appears quite promising. So thank you very much.
First is AQ dependence that you have Q square.
Yeah.
This exponent, is it in any way related to eta? I mean.
No, it should be completely unrelated to eta because eta is the same in all these models, right?
Yeah.
Eta is always the 3dxy exponent.
And the second question is, since you now have the Ising model for the confined quantum criticality, can you say anything about going to 3D?
Yes, in fact, so we have done the same model not exactly the same model, but a similar model in 3D. It will appear in PRL in a couple of weeks, I guess. So there we studied also multi. So what we had in this model is four spin interaction. In 3D, to actually even get a valence bond solid order, we have had to go to an eight spin interaction. So we had to put these singlet projection operators in various ways spanning a cube. It was not enough to put it just in a plaquette. But nevertheless, we could get various forms of valence bond solid phases, and we observed very strongly first order transitions in all cases, both between the Nell and the valence bond solids and between these two valence bond solids, strongly first order.
So my question is about the two competing schemes about the transition between two ordered states. One is first order, the other one is deconfined one. I think a few years ago, UMass group, they look at the Boser-Haber model with UU prime, and they look at the transition between superfluid and the charge density wave states. And as far as I can remember, they claim that it's a first order phase transition down to very low temperature.
Yeah.
In your case, I guess you don't have evidence of first order? Or
well, yes, as you saw, there's no evidence, of course, numerically in this way. Even if I go to a million times a million sites, somebody can still tell me, well, it could be first order if you go to 10 million. But okay, we cannot rule it out. But I should also say, I maybe should have mentioned it, we also studied before the XY version of this same model, which you can see as a hardcore boson model with nearest neighbor hopping and a four spin term, which is the analog of the one I just told you about. That initially we thought also was continuous, but later on, it's clear that it's not consistent with deconfined quantum criticality. I'm not completely convinced it's a first order transition, but the exponents are very strange and they're not at all in agreement with deconfined quantum criticality. But it appears that, well, this model behaves completely differently, so there's no sort of similarity in the scaling or anything in these two models. So it appears that maybe the SU2 case is more promising for deconfined quantum criticality.
I was wondering if you compared to a simple mean field theory of that Hamiltonian that you studied. I mean, would mean field theory describe any of your results, or is it?
Yeah, so actually there's a paper, it was, I guess, submitted to CODMAT a few weeks ago by my colleagues at BU, Valeri Kotov and Antonio Castraneta. They have studied mean field theory. They can describe this transition in mean field theory. The critical coupling comes out completely wrong. But then they can go further. They can so they do a theory in the columnar singlet triplet basis. then they can apply this Bruckner approximation, which is an expansion in the density of triplets. And doing that, they can actually get a more reasonable value of the critical coupling. And in addition, they see some unusual features there. So if they compare exactly the same calculation in the JJ prime model or J1, J2 model, the frustrated Heisenberg model, and this model has some completely different features in terms of how the gap starts to behave and how the order parameters behave close to the critical point. So they can, of course, not access the critical exponents. Actually, the scheme breaks down as you go to the critical point. But there's some signs even in that sort of mean field theory that something unusual is going on here. So there's a paper on quantum math on that.
So I had a question about, so you have this fourfold anisotropy that controls the phases, the ordered phase, but not the transition. What I was wondering is there a meaning of that? So there's a definite sign that comes out, microscopic, I guess, for that anisotropy. Usually in magnetic systems, it's crystal symmetry break, you feel that sign can be, you know, either sign depending on whether the ordered phase wants to be along the diagonal or along the bonds. And so I was wondering, is that, does that correspond to the plaquette versus the columnar?
Yes, I think exactly. So you're talking about the sign of this H here.
Exactly.
So if H is negative, I would like to have the order along the 90 degree symmetry axis. If it's positive, I would get the 45 degree shifted ones, which in fact would correspond to the plaquette phase in the valence bond solid. Yeah.
Okay. Let's thank the speaker, and we should start at 11, I'm told. So thank you very much, and we'll have two speakers.
So I should turn this off.